So yesterday we started to go through the different forms of birth control and their practical advantages and disadvantages and halachic advantages and disadvantages. And remember how far we got, which we did condoms. Okay, so we went through four yesterday. Essentially, we went through tying the tubes, right? We went through what else? Pills, condoms. What else?
Halachic condoms.
Anuvering, right? Okay, halachic condoms. Yes, So let's go. There's only one other one that's really really common that we haven't touched upon yet, and that well two more that are very very common that we haven't touched upon yet. But I'm going to try to get through more than just two more. So the first, the diaphragm. What is the diaphragm? So it is a shallow disc-shaped thing, like a little saucer, that's made out of a soft silicone, and the woman bends it in half, inserts it vaginally, and it then covers the cervix. So it sort of like blocks the cervix. It's a barrier that covers the cervix, stopping sperm from joining the egg. Because remember, all birth control has to either kill the sperm, kill the egg, or stop the sperm from eating the egg. So this is just, it creates this barrier that the sperm will not be able to get through to be able to meet the egg in the fallopian tubes and therefore begin a pregnancy. It works best together with spermicide. They always recommend using spermicide in addition to a diaphragm because sperm can get around it. Sperm is very sneaky like that, and the diaphragm doesn't fit like perfectly snugly around the area to totally block the whole thing. So in order to kill whatever sperm might otherwise get around it, they fill the whole perimeter of it with spermicide. So hopefully that is meant to stop any sperm from going any further. That's what medically they always recommend. After a woman has tashmish with a diaphragm in, she leaves it in for 6 hours. Meaning this is not a thing that a doctor needs to insert. A doctor has to fit her for a diaphragm to get one made for her, and then when she has one made for her, she inserts it herself and pulls it out herself. Right, I mean, it's not like the kind of thing you just go to the CVS and pick a diaphragm off of the shelf and buy it, right? It's something she has to go to a physician. The physician will, I don't know exactly how they figure out the size, how they measure her, but the women come in different sizes also. They have different builds, and as a result, they get one that fits them, and then she removes it. But after having tashma, she needs to leave it in for 6 hours in order for it to be effective, and then she washes it off in the morning. So usually she'll just go to sleep with it, meaning the tashma at night, she'll go to sleep, and then when she wakes up, hopefully if she's getting enough sleep, so it's more than 6 hours later by the time she wakes up, right? We recommend that people get, I think the Rambam recommends 8 hours of sleep, so hopefully she's getting something in that ballpark, something more than, your Fitbit tells you 8 hours. My Fitbit is never, I was once sick and my Fitbit told me that it was proud of how much sleep I got. It has never been proud of how much sleep I got. So, but... Yeah, I don't know. Right. That's a good, we should have like an app that from Fitbit. So that will also count for like shuckling is not walking, you know, like other things like that. A number of Jewish things that we could account for. When I was in Eretz Yisrael, I was on the back of a bus most of the day as we were traveling from place to place. And it kept on registering as like a step because I was bouncing so much. Like, so you got a great workout. I was sitting there. I was nauseous. But so 6 hours later, she wakes up, she washes off with soap and water. And that's what leads to the shilas that very often that sometimes happen where you have blood found on the diaphragm. Right? What do you do with dam found on the diaphragm? Dine ksamin. Did we discuss that when we did ksamin? Ooh. Okay, the practical advantages of a diaphragm is that if you want to get pregnant, meaning if she may decide she wants to get pregnant, she could just stop using it. Meaning there's no procedure she has to go for to get someone to remove it for her. I mean, she just stops using it, she gets pregnant. It doesn't affect the body's natural hormones at all, and that's the major advantage that women find, because there are a lot of women that just don't handle pills well, that their bodies react poorly to estrogen or sometimes even to progesterone, that they don't deal with it well. There are some women, their bodies don't react poorly to it, but they have in their head that they don't like putting in foreign, they don't like messing with their hormones. And it can be used while breastfeeding. As opposed to the typical birth control pills aren't good for breastfeeding, and that's why they have separate breastfeeding pills, which are better, but this, you know, clearly has zero effect on the breastfeeding. The practical disadvantages are that they're often misused, which makes their effective rate about 75% to 80%. So, you know, 1 year later, there's a 20% to 25% chance that they have a kid after, or that she's pregnant, I should say. That's how they measure these rates. Meaning, what does it mean, 75%? That if they have Tashmish, you know, four times, that one of the times she's going to become pregnant? No, that's not what 75% means. 75% means if she's using it for a year, then 25% of the time, a year later, she'll be pregnant. Right, that's what it means, 75% effectiveness. Another disadvantage is it can cause urinary tract infections. As you might expect, any foreign item that you're going to stick in there may cause such things. And also, if her body size changes, she gains weight, she loses weight, it might stop fitting, and also needs to be updated. Every couple of years, she needs a new one. Another disadvantage is that as far as mitzvahs ona, as far as just the romantic side of the relationship, it could be a little bit of a mood killer if you have to wait while she inserts something, you know, just as things are getting going. And also could get knocked out during Tashmish. Not so common, but it could happen that it gets knocked out of place during Tashmish, in which case it's really not effective. So those are some of the disadvantages. Okay, what about halacha? What does halacha have to say about a diaphragm? So we'll start with how Rav Shechter approaches this. The Yamshel Shlomo, Maseches Yevamos, in the first part of Yevamos, allowed using a moch. And the Chazon Ish in Eben Ezer, Perek Lamed Zayin, also allows using a moch. And the background is as follows. The Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, tells us that according to Rav Meir, Gimel Noshim Mishamshos B'moch, that there are three women where if they were to get pregnant, it would be dangerous, are allowed to use moch. Moch is like a piece of cotton that would be stuck into the woman to catch all of the zera so that she won't become pregnant. So three nashim are allowed to use moch only because there is a chashash sakana. And then the chachamim disagree. The chachamim omrim achazu v'achazu mishameshes kedarkav haleches u'min ha-shamayim yirachamu shnemer shomer p'sayim Hashem. That this is one of the examples where we say shomer p'sayim Hashem, that she should be mishameshes kedarka. Even these three women should not use a moch, don't use any birth control, everything will be fine, shomer p'sayim Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will protect people who are just living life the way that they normally, the way normal people live life without taking any extra precautions, which is a very fascinating concept. I mean, you're doing something that you know could be dangerous, and you're saying, yeah, but that's what people do. So this is most famously in our generation, or the last generation, was applied by Rav Moshe when it came to smoking. The whole world smokes. So Shomer P'sayim Hashem, the whole world smokes, and you just live life like the rest of the world, so you're allowed to do it. Meaning, you don't have to worry. Meaning, does Shomer P'sayim Hashem mean that it's a guarantee that it's not going to be dangerous? No. It just means that the danger involved, which may be a statistical danger, and the statistics may hold true, it doesn't make it usher. Meaning, just because, and normally you're not allowed to do dangerous things, this isn't called a dangerous thing if it's a normal thing. So if normal people driving cars, even if the statistics tell you that driving in a car is dangerous, it's a normal thing to do, so you're allowed to live life normally. And yeah, some people will die when they live life normally. But it's mutter. It's mutter to live life normally. The reason why Shomer P'sayim Hashem doesn't apply to smoking nowadays, and why even Rav David Feinstein you know, has said that it no longer applies, is because it's not normal anymore. No one smokes. I mean, not no one. There's still too many, but much fewer people smoke. I've mentioned this to you in the past. I mean, when I was growing up, every restaurant had ashtrays on every table. Every hotel had ashtrays all over the place. People were always smoking. You rarely see it. It's illegal to smoke indoors in any public place nowadays. So it's in Europe. I stopped in Israel, in the airport they have like these smoking rooms, right? But I don't think we have that in America, do we? Smoking rooms where people go into, people just vape their brains out, but they don't. People aren't smoking. So anyway, so this is the application of Shomer P'sayim Hashem. So Rashi understands that the Chachamim, who we paskin like, hold that it's usher to use a moch even when there's sakana, But what does that mean, even when there's sakana? So the way Rosh Hashanah understands it, what Rashi's telling us is that if the sakana is less than 50-50, meaning normally, I mean, if something is like a 5% sakana, you would never do it, right? You would never ever do it, and it would be asur to do. But if it's a less than 50-50 sakana, and it's something that's very routine, that people don't consider it as dangerous, consider it a normal activity that people do, then we apply Shomer Psayim Hashem. Rav Shechter always uses, in general, he uses that measure of what's routine, what people consider to be dangerous, as a way to measure sakana. Meaning he does not use statistics as a way to measure sakana. Because there is no number that, like, everyone is, you know, perfectly on board with, and sometimes our feelings don't conform to the statistics. Like, if you were to ask most people, if you were to, let's say, everyone in this room were to call their mothers today and say, oh, I'm going skydiving, I'm going to jump out of a plane, don't worry, tandem jump together with someone who knows what they're doing, so it's all cool. So probably the, you know, what you'll hear at the other end of the phone is not, okay, have fun, you know, send pictures. No, right, it'll probably be something a little more intense than that. Why? Because that seems dangerous. But the instructor will tell you statistically that almost nobody dies going skydiving, and that statistically it may be true, right? But if it seems dangerous, so statistically someone might say, yeah, I could walk from here to the Bronx at 2 in the morning or something, and, you know, I've done it 1,000 times, nothing will ever happen. But if most people will say, that's insane, right? So then that becomes, it's no longer included in Shomer Psayim Hashem. So Rav Shachter used to speak about when he was a kid, they used to have drills for when the Russians attack. That all the kids in school would have to hide under their desk. You know, like we have fire drills, they'd have to hide under their desks in case there was a nuclear attack. Like, that's going to help. But they had all these drills, and one of the things that they used to have to do was that if it was nighttime, everyone in the city had to shut their lights. Because the Russian planes, when they were going to fly over a city, they were going to see the lights, and that's how they would know where to drop the bomb. So what you had to do is you had to shut the lights. So what happens if there was a drill on a Friday night? Do you shut the lights? Do you say that this is dangerous? So Rav Shechter said that his father thought that it depends on what you think is dangerous. And if it was obvious that it was a drill, and you're not bothered by it, then you don't think it's a scary thing to do. So then Shomer Psayim Hashem. But if you think that it's dangerous, if it's something that actually terribly frightens you, then you can't say Shomer Psayim Hashem. So for two different people, it could be mutter for one person and asur for the other person. Right? You could have two different halachas. He said his father used to leave the lights on when it happened on Friday night. He would get tickets. They would give him a ticket. They would have tickets for such a thing. They'd have to pay some sort of fine for leaving the lights on. So that's what happens. And Rav Shechter quoted this from the Pe'er Hadar in Chelek Gimel, and it was, he says that it was reported to be the sheet of the Chafetz Chaim as well. And Rav Shechter has brought that up to me in a number of different contexts when we've discussed issues relating to danger. So if it's less than 50-50 and it's something that people routinely do without considering it dangerous, so then you can't use a moch. Then you have to have regular tashmish, just as it would normally be us to use a moch. That's considered a normal circumstance. Shita Mekubet says, Ksubas Tavlam Tesa Medalev, most often when you hear Shita Mekubet says, it's from Ksubas, that's the most, Shita Mekubet said the most to say on Ksubas, says that most other Rishonim disagree with Rashi and hold that a mayor requires the use of a moch, because Savi Sakada. The mayor says you must use a moch, similar to the halacha that a cholesh yesh basakana is not allowed to fast on Yom Kippur, right? That you have to take care of yourself. And Marshal assumes that according to those Rishonim, the moch is always mutter. The question is it a chiyuv? It's always mutter to use. Is it a chiyuv to use when there's going to be a sakana? So in the case of possible sakana, so you have machlokas tanayim, is it a chiyuv? So Reb Chaim Eiser in Achiezer Chelek Aleph Simul Chav Gimel and Chelek Gimel Simul Chav Dalet Oz Hei says that the other Rishonim would agree with Rashi that Moch is normally Aser because it partially interferes with Tashmish, and they're just arguing whether it's a Chiyuv over here because it can't be considered Kedar Kal Aretz, it would be Ashkas Azera. But a number of the other Acharim disagree, And they say no, that moch is generally mutter according to these rishonim, and that's why there's a machlokas whether there's a chiyuv. So when the woman's life is in danger, it becomes kederach kol aretz, says Rav Chaim Eiser. You know, Chaim Eiser holds it's normally aser. The question is that, and why is it normally aser? Because it's not a normal tashmish. There's something interfering with the normal tashmish. When the woman's life is in danger, it becomes kederach kol aretz, because that's what normal people do when life is in danger. So then the Tanaim would argue whether it's mutter or it's a chiyuv. Chazanish was only makel when it's dangerous for the woman to be pregnant. So Rav Shachter points out that a diaphragm lechor is better than a moch, because it really doesn't interfere with tashmish, meaning the husband doesn't feel it during tashmish. It's covering the cervix, but it's beyond makom shashamish tash, so it's not something that gets in the way of tashmish. It gets in the way of the zera, and the marsham in chelik al v'simon ches paskin this way as well. So Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted by Rav Yechiel Michel Stern as saying that it's only mutter makom sakana, but there are conflicting reports about what Rav Shlomo Zalman held at the end of his life. I mean, there are those that say that Rav Shlomo Zalman thought at the end of his life that it was mutter even shalom makom sakana. So Rav Shachter generally, when people ask him about birth control, or at least used to be, he would most routinely be matir a diaphragm before he was matir. He prefers diaphragm to birth control pills because it's not changing the woman's meaning. Remember, every form of contraception is either somewhat being misares the woman, somewhat being misares the man, or stopping the zera from meeting the egg. Mm-hmm. So here, the birth control pills are like a way of partially being misaris a woman, temporarily partially being misaris the woman, and he thought that that's a problem. Whereas the diaphragm is not doing that. It's not affecting the woman, it's not affecting the man, it's just not introducing the zera to the egg.
What about the spermicide that's on the...
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. That's the next one, spermicide, because that's the next logical one. It happens to be Sturmbach in the Tshuva, in Chilek Beisim, in Taflam and Zayin, in Tshuva Svan Hagos. He writes, Elu shemishtamshim bidiophragman. I assume that means diaphragm, which is interesting that the G, the silent G, makes it into a silent gimel in Hebrew. I don't think, you know, you don't have silent letters in Hebrew. Lincoln, Rechov Lincoln, yeah. Rechov Avram Lincoln. right, it doesn't work. That's what it reminds me when, whose wedding was it? It was, I think it was Ariel Abitan got married in Tunica, Mississippi. I don't know if you know the Abitan boys, you probably know some Abitans. You know, there are a lot of them. So he got married in Tunica, Mississippi. So it was a Shaila, how to spell Mississippi on the Ksuba. So Rav Meir Goldberg was in Sari Kedushin, and he spelled it Mem Yud Samach Samach Yud Samach Samach Yud Pei Pei Yud, which I thought was a little funny because it's just transferring the English over to the Hebrew. But I think he said that he asked Rav Nata. I mean, he must have asked Rav Nata because, like, how could you not? During the wedding in Mississippi, he's the man. So anyway, so b'dayu fragman shemanicha b'fnim lefnei tashmish u'mutzia dava moch lefnei tashmish sheheta rak b'shas sakana. He says this is a moch lefnei tashmish, right? That's only mutter b'shas sakana. Gam b'zeh nechleku harbei poskim v'ani lo hitarti klal. He says I've never been matir a moch, a diaphragm. V'af sheshemati sheba America gam b'zeh matirin anu lo matirin davar zeh klal. So I heard in America people have a more lenient view of this. Not here. I don't know if here's in South Africa or here's in Israel. I mean, I guess it's in Israel. Shegam lematirin mutarak b'sakana mamish. And even those who are matir would only be b'sakana mamish. V'cheirin ani moru ba'kanal b'siyata d'shmaya. Aval b'lel tevila shalul l'sabra v'hol v'einu muberes v'atabas Allah friya gamachar yitzir ki agav n'lo itarti. So he doesn't even allow b'makam sakana. And therefore, many poskim are very hesitant to be matir a diaphragm, because, you know, the way we've presented it is not the way Rav Shechter generally presents it, because almost all other poskim, including everyone that Machon Puas speaks to, says that pills are the best, meaning pills are the least questionable form of birth control. Diaphragm is already very shaky. Meaning diaphragm may be a moch lefnei tashmish, which may be also shalom makom sakana. So unless a doctor is going to verify and you trust the doctor that it's dangerous for the woman, sakanas nefashos mamish, for the woman to become pregnant, so then it's it's at least a major shaila whether you can use a diaphragm. So what about the spermicide? So the spermicide, first, what it is, it's a foam or a cream that a woman applies and is designed to immobilize the sperm, right? It's designed to kill the sperm. The practical advantage of it is that it's non-hormonal, it's inexpensive, and it's easy to use. The practical disadvantages is that it's not really that effective, meaning if you use only spermicide, it's got like a 70-80% success rate. It can cause irritation, just like any foreign substance or cream that she places vaginally can cause irritation. It has to remain in place for 6 hours to make sure it kills all the sperm, and it has to be applied at the correct time. So all of those things are reasons that people are hesitant about using it. La halacha, Rav Moshe says that if it's dangerous for her to become pregnant, it's usher to use spermicide. If it's dangerous for her to become pregnant, I would think if it's dangerous, mutter. He says no, because it's ineffective. So you better use something that's effective if it's dangerous for her to become pregnant. Also, you use spermicide. Eben Ezer, Chel Gal Simen Samachay, and Chel Gimel Simen Chaf Aleph. Rav Moshe holds that if it's dangerous for her to become pregnant, say the Mar Makamos, Eben Ezer Chel Gal Simen Samachay, and Eben Ezer Chel Gimel Simen Chaf Aleph. Rameir Arik holds that it is not called Hashchas Zera. And this Rav Shachter quotes, I think. And I think, maybe not, maybe Rav Shachter doesn't, but maybe I saw it somewhere else. And the Tashmish is completely normal, Kedarach Kala Aretz. It's meaning it's normal Tashmish. It's not Ashchas HaZera, in the sense that the Zera is not being Mutal Al Eitzim Ba'avanim. The Zera is going into the Guf HaYisha, and therefore it's fine. Rav Moshe explains that there's no Isra Ashchas HaZera once it's Niflat Min HaGuf. Meaning, at the moment that the zera comes out of the man, where does it go? If it goes directly on Eitzim Vavanim, then you have a problem. If it goes into the Gufa Isha, even though the Gufa Isha has spermicide inside that's waiting to kill the zera, but it that's only subsequent to the Hotzah zera. B'meir Arik Nimra Yosher Chelik Aleph Simen Kuf Lamed Aleph. And is one of the major poskim to discuss this, but the Minchas Yitzchak quotes it also in Chelek Aleph Simen Kuf Tes Vav, and Minchas Yitzchak writes that even though it's a shaila of Hashchas HaZera, it's better than a moch, because it doesn't block the path of the zera, and also there's no Maisa B'Yadayim to be Mashchas the zera, it's only a grum. Then there's another view. Rav Shlomo Zalman held that spermicide is just like a moch, because Zera hits something that will ruin it, and it's pretty immediate. And therefore, it's just like a moch. Rav Menashe Klein, in Chuvus Mishnah Halachos, Chilek Hei Simen Reish Yud, he writes that Hanogel Didan Pashut to Bein Begomi, Bein Bemishcha. Mishcha means spermicide. Ika Bezei Yisra Mishamashcha, Zera Bekolof, and Shu, Rav Kematel Aleitzim Avanim. He views it Mamish like being Matel Aleitzim Avanim, Ubechal Erva Onanu. And therefore it doesn't matter that you're Mekayim Peruvu. He says this isn't about Peruvu, this is about Hashchas HaZera, that's also for everybody, and therefore you're not allowed to use it. Well, Vulig explained this view, meaning it's really a fundamental argument about what Hashchas HaZera means. Does Hashchas HaZera mean that you're actually destroying the Zera, or that the Zera is not going into the Guf HaYisha? Right? I mean, that's a fundamental machlokas, how literally you take the term Hashchas HaZera. Over here, you're killing the Zera. But the Zera is going in its natural way, and as long as it goes in its natural way, half the poskim say, the majority of poskim say, that would not be a problem. So most poskim are okay with spermicides, again, provided that puruvu is already taken care of. The other most common form of birth control is an IUD. An IUD is like a small plastic device, and it's sometimes coated with copper. It's inserted deep into the uterus by a doctor, and the goal is obviously to prevent pregnancy, but it has to be implanted by a doctor. Nobody knows how it works, which is amazing that they thought of it, but they don't know exactly what it does. They just know it works. They don't know exactly why it works or how it works. Adayom. They have a better idea today than they had, 20, 30 years ago, but no one's sure exactly how it works. Some suggest that it prevents the fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus, and this could be very critical, because it can raise a whole new shaila. Meaning, there are two possible ways that it could work, right? One is that it stops the sperm from meeting the egg. And we said three kinds of birth control. kill the sperm, kill the egg, or stop the sperm from eating the egg, right? It might be a fourth kind. Maybe the sperm meets the egg, but then what has to happen? That happens in the fallopian tubes. Then the fertilized egg, and we'll take bio?
Implants
on the wall of the uterus, right? So what it might stop is that they have a fertilized egg, and now it's not going to implant itself on the wall of the uterus, and therefore pregnancy won't continue. What shaila have we now opened up? Abortion. Right? So this is also an issue with the morning after pill. How does that work exactly? Does it stop the sperm from meeting the egg, or does it stop, and is that an abortion? Right? When does pregnancy begin? Does pregnancy begin with a fertilized egg, or with when the fertilized egg implants itself on the wall of the uterus? So some assume that it prevents the fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus. Others assume the IUD somehow interferes with the fertilization, not with the implantation. Some IUDs secrete progesterone. That's called the Mirena IUD. It's commonly referred to as the Mirena. It can cause spotting for about 6 months, and then she often stops getting her period entirely. Copper one also causes spotting for the first few months and can cause prolonged periods. In general, people with IUDs have horrible, horrible first year with the IUD. I mean, the IUD is like a long-term solution. If she's not going to have children for the next 10 years, she goes and gets an IUD, right? And the first year is like horrible spotting problems. Nothing's consistent, and she's bleeding all the time. For many, many women, and there's no like set rule that applies to everybody. So the practical benefits of it are: if you need long-term birth control, it lasts for years, and it's just about as, and it's super effective. They if you look on the WebMD and the like, you know, these are, they put it on par with abstinence for effectiveness. Now, abstinence is pretty effective, so that's a pretty high level of effectiveness. It doesn't interfere with Tashmish Akiyuza. It has no interference with Tashmish. I shouldn't say Akiyuza. It might a little bit. We'll discuss that later. But generally, it doesn't interfere with Tashmish, and it doesn't require doing anything before Tashmish, so it doesn't hurt the mitzvah's ona either. It doesn't kill the mood, because she doesn't have to say, oh, wait a second, let me figure this out, and right? And it's tiny, and she can't feel it. The practical drawbacks are that it can cause pelvic inflammatory diseases, although they say that that's really a problem only if she has multiple sexual partners, which Baruch Hashem, most women in our community that are asking these shaylos do not. It must be inserted by a doctor. She can't do it herself, and it sometimes has side effects, and in very rare cases, it could slip out of place. So let's go through the three normal concerns, right? The three normal concerns that we have with every form of birth control: Hashchas Zera, Mitzvah Sona, and Sirus. Right? Those are the three normal things to look at. So they're all not a problem over here. The Chuvus Lev Aryeh. Who's Lev Aryeh? Dayan Grosnas, in Lev Aryeh Chelet Beis Simen Tes, points out that even though the purpose of the kapper is to disable the Zera, that's not Hashchas HaZera, because it's way after the sperm has entered the uterus. Meaning it's better than a spermicide. A spermicide is not in the uterus. So as soon as the sperm comes out, it's going straight to the spermicide. Once sperm enters the uterus, to then kill the sperm, that's not Hashchas HaZera. The sperm is already done. It's done its job. So it hasn't done its job, so to say. But it's already... You can't make it a Hashchas HaZera l'mafreya. So that's what Dayan Grosnas says. And since you don't feel it at all, it doesn't detract from its zona. Rav Moshe in Eben Ezra Chel Gimel Simon Chaf Aleph was concerned that you can feel it. He was concerned because there's a little string that sticks down from it almost into the vaginal canal, and the idea for that is so that it's easier for the doctor to get out later. So they need that little string to stick down from it. So Rav Moshe was concerned that maybe it will interfere with mitzvah's ona. But you can ask a doctor to shorten the string if it does interfere, meaning it shouldn't. It's not meant to interfere with mitzvah sa'ona. It's not an issur sirus, because it's temporary and it's reversible. Again, assuming that temporary sirus of a woman in such a way is not considered sirus. And that's why Rav Osner and Shevet HaLevi, Chelek Gimel Sim Kofayim Tes, Tzitz Eliezer, Chelek Yud Sim Chav Hei, Perek Yud, and Chelek Yud Aleph. I have a typo on the simon here for Chelek Yud Aleph, so I don't know what simon. And most other poskim assume that to be an ideal birth control. Again, provided that she needs long term and has a heter for long term. The biggest drawback halachically is that it's only for long term. And most women, we don't, like we discussed, we don't just say, oh, don't worry, 5 years, don't have any children. No, we say we should constantly be reassessing, thinking about how much can I handle, how many neshamas can I bring into this world, and can I care for appropriately, and the like. Tzitz Eliezer describes, simas hatabas eino goremes lafsada zera, it doesn't cause hafsada zera, lo shalabal v'lo shalaisha, v'kolpu ulaso shemashpia be'eze derech shehi, because that's the best anyone's got, it's mashpia in some way or another, shekosli beis rachma eino makabu mesazera shala, that the kosli beis harechem are not able to receive the zera. Afilum kvar nischaber bezara shalabal, even if the egg and sperm already met. Bedomeli isha behiryona shein kosli rachma makablim od as zera. Afilum kvar kolat vischaber lezera bal. Just like a pregnant woman can't become pregnant again. A woman who has an IUD won't become pregnant.
Why is that not serious?
Why is that not serious? Because it's not permanent and it's not an isha. So anything that's not permanent anisha, typically there's no, most posts can assume that there would not be an issue. Temporary seizures, unless you actually did something to the organs, unless you actually affect directly touched, you know, did something to the organs, cut the organs or tied the organs or something like that. The question of how it works, though, relates to our attitude towards abortion. Rav Sternbach and Chelek Aleph Simin Tav Kuf Ches Os Mem Tes. Tav Kuf Ches in Chelek Aleph, Rav Sternbach says, Klalei Hora'a for Paskening Nida. And he just gives 49 rules of Paskening Nida. So the 49th rule, the last on the list, is this one. And Chelek Besim Tav Lamed Zayin, he's worried about the abortion angle. And Rav Sternbach in Tav Lamed Zayin says, Sof Davar, Afsha Harbe Rabbanim Matirin Hatkin Toch Rachmi, Ani Lo Matir El Ba'ofen Shebelavachi Racho Kusha Tesaber. He says, I'll be Matir if it's unlikely that she'd become pregnant anyway. Vahainu Kishma Cheres Betvila, Umanika, Uchadome, if she delays her Tvila. Why, if she delays her Tvila, is she unlikely to become pregnant? She missed ovulation. Meaning, after ovulation, when a woman ovulates, so the egg is viable for 24 hours. So the egg will hang around the fallopian tubes waiting for a partner for 24 hours. After 24 hours, the egg is not viable anymore. So if she ovulates and then waits more than 24 hours, all the sperm in the world could come in there. It's not going to get her pregnant. Right? And that's why, typically speaking, the way that halacha sets up a woman's cycle as far as going to the mikveh is really, really good, because most women ovulate right around mid-cycle. Right, or a little bit before mid-cycle. So if a woman waits 12 days after her last period to go to the mikveh, it's usually right around the time of ovulation. And the husband, and there's a mitzvah's ona on Lel Tvila, and it means the husband hasn't had bia for the last 2 weeks, which means that the husband's sperm count is as high as it's ever going to be throughout the course of the month. And that's dafka when they have tashmish. So if she ovulates within the next few days, the sperm is viable for another 72 to, depending who you ask, but if you ask Chazal, for 72 hours. If you ask doctors, they say maybe up to 5 days also. So as long as she ovulates within 72 hours of that first tashmish, so it could be great for becoming pregnant. It doesn't work that way for everybody. There's what's called orthodox infertility, where a woman has a very abbreviated cycle where her ovulation is more than 24 hours before she went to the mikveh. In which case, she's not able to get pregnant. She's medically able to become pregnant, but she's not halachically able to become pregnant. So then we work with that. There are ways around that. But anyway, so Rav Sternbach writes over here that if she's anyway not going to be pregnant, then I'll allow it. Aval k'shematzoi she'nechneses li'hiryon v'zema akva novachani she'mashchis nefesh v'yesh b'zeh chiluke deos perofim v'lchein hitarti rak ba'ofen she'veinu. He says, I don't know, doctors aren't sure exactly how this works. I'm worried about being mashchis nefesh. And in that, those klalim of psak, he's even more explicit. Zug shedor shumeharav, heter l'menias hirayon. Ma'amtsu muslim levtoch ba'ashem shiuchu l'gadal ha'yiladim barchava. He says, if a couple comes to you, first thing you do to them is tell them, of course you'll be able to raise children, you should have confidence in that. Don't look for a teirim in it. And every child you bring into the world is a mitzvah rabba. in Ba'emes Chalasha, and if she's actually weak and really can't, so then Miyatzim Rak L'Tkufa Mugbelas L'Gvla Glulos L'Miniyasirot. So then you tell her birth control pills for a short period of time. V'imzem Mazik Etzla, and if that's a problem, Az Tishtamesh B'Spray. What's spray? Spermicide. Meaning he's describing a lost potential life. He says, if you put in this IUD, you're going to lose a life. If a woman had a fertilized egg and she might lose that, you'd be Michal Shabbos to save that, says Rav Sternbach. And it's also Hilchas Nida problems, as we know, because of the staining. What's the problem with that psak? They're saying that it's good for when she delays going to the mikvah or when she's nursing. It's a long-term solution, meaning it's not something you do on a one-off basis. So that's a problem. The common thinking, by the way, now is that it works before there's fertilization of the egg, so there's not really a concern for Isra Pala. Rav Moshe was very concerned for the staining and the prolonged Isra Labayla that it would create. That's what Rav Moshe didn't like it. Nikras Moshe Ibn Ezra Chilik Dalid Simen Samaches Chilik Dalid Simen Samaches Avala Eitza Shekasa V'lishtamish Betkein Toch Rachami Ein La'asos Mishum Shekasha Ma'ol Ditar Midam Nidus. He says, don't do it. He says, cause too many Nida problems. So in the very next Shuvah he gets even stronger in Ibn Ezra Chilik Dalid Simen Samaches. Moshe was against birth control pills, but not because of Sirus. Moshe was against birth control pills because of Hilchas Nida. And he says the same problem with IUDs. He said, until they can make a birth control pill, it doesn't make her stain all the time, which now they have, but until they can make a birth control pill, it doesn't make her stain all the time, I cannot approve of birth control pills, and I cannot approve of IUDs either. In Nishma Safam, he writes that putting it in and taking it out, just stam to know about an IUD, putting it in and taking it out does not make her a Nida, meaning, it's not a psich samakar, so even though in psich samakar below tam, it's very, very tiny. There's often some staining, but usually you could attribute that to dam maka because it scratches on the way in on the way out. The status of all the dam between periods is the really hard part. So Rav Moshe says it's all dam nida. Rav Moshe thinks you're going to be nichshal and dam nida the whole time. Rav Avadia and Taras Habayis Chelik Aleph Simen Hey. Chelik Aleph Simen Hey, page Reishon Gimel, says that if the doctor says that the IUD is causing the bleeding and says he knows that that's where it's from, then it's, and it's Shalom B'Shas Vesta, she's Tahora. Sometimes the string could have a little blood on it from when she got her period. And then if she subsequently does Bediko, some blood might come off from the string onto the Bediko cloth. But there's no way of knowing that that's where the blood came from, and it can cause problems that way. So in my experience, granted it's limited and I don't know that much, and I'm certainly not a doctor or anything, but in my very limited experience, IUDs cause tremendous agmas nefesh in the first year that a person has it. After, there are women that swear by it because they're 5 years in and they're like, I never ever become a Nida, it's fantastic. And they're women become Nida much less frequently nowadays than they used to, because now the pills are not, a lot of the pills women double up or triple up before, so they'll become a Nida. I think one of the Rabbanim that works in Yeshiva, and he's a Rav in a very major Jewish community, said that they have statistics of how many women go to the mikveh, and it's a growing community and the mikveh numbers are shrinking, and it's not because people are becoming less religious, nor is it because people are having larger families. It's just that women are becoming Nida less frequently. Morning after pill, if you put a copper IUD in within 5 days, it will also prevent pregnancy, but that's not a reasonable option on very short notice. So there are two types of morning after pills. There's the Ella. It could be taken up to 5 days later and it requires a prescription. And then there's what's called Plan B, which has a whole bunch of different versions of it. And that you can get at any drugstore and anybody can be, and it can be taken up to 5 days later, but they recommend within 3 days. Essentially, the hormone keeps the egg cell in the ovary and it therefore never meets the sperm. Meaning if the egg cell is still in the ovary and has not yet been released to the fallopian tubes, it doesn't allow it out. And the sperm doesn't get into the ovary. The sperm only gets as far as the fallopian tubes. So that's the idea of it, if it can. That only works because fertilization doesn't happen immediately. And if it's taken during the first half of the menstrual cycle, the egg just never gets released. If ovulation has happened, then it creates a mucus that traps the sperm and stops the sperm from getting all the way to the egg. There's some debate as to whether it stops implantation, meaning it certainly is designed to stop fertilization. But what if fertilization already happened? Let's say the sperm swam really quickly and the egg was already waiting there. Now it's the morning after. So does it work? So that's some debate in the medical community, whether it actually stops implantation. I tried to find that online. It seems that the common thought now is that it does not stop implantation and is therefore not like an abortion, but I don't know what you can trust online, meaning a lot of these places just want to make people feel good, that, you know, don't worry, it's not an abortion or whatever. So I don't know. The way it was explained to me by a doctor when I had this Shaila a few years ago was that it's a suffix abortion, meaning it's not a suffix abortion, it's a suffix whether the egg has been fertilized or not. You then have a suffix whether that's called an abortion, right? But it's a suffix whether the egg has been fertilized or not. Right. So, no, seriously. Meaning, I got a call from a guy who said that they absolutely cannot get pregnant now, that you know, they've been Mekayim Peruvu a couple times over, and one of the children has special needs that was taking a lot of their attention, a lot of their time, a lot of their energy. He was between jobs. Like, it was like things were not, it was not, and they were stupid. They, you know, they had Tashmish the previous night without any, I don't know what they were thinking, right? So now can she take a morning after pill? So at that time, I had to look into the issue. I think Rav Shechter was Mekel at that time, if I recall correctly. The practical benefits is that it's your only option at that point. So the practical drawbacks is nausea, dizziness, it feels wrong. Halacha, there are three basic approaches. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu had asked Rav Berstein from Machon Pua to clarify the Metzius, and once he did, Rav Eliyahu paskin that it can be used if she foolishly had tashmish without thinking of the consequences, because it does not abort the baby, it prevents the fertilization of the egg, and in the event the fertilization already occurred, it prevents implantation, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu did not think that that's called abortion. He thought pregnancy starts at implantation. So if it prevents implantation, he thought that's fine. Some say, and this is quoted by Dr. Abraham in the name of Shlomo Zalman, Nishmas Avram Choshe Mishpatim Tav Chav Hei, that even though there's no Isser Hapala, it should only be done in cases of rape because of the concern of Hashchas HaZera. Wow. Rav Zilberstein in Shira Torah L'Rofim Chelek Dalitzim Reish Membeis holds it's a shayla of abortion and therefore only mutter if it would put the mother's life in danger. He views pregnancy to begin at fertilization, not implantation. And he's working with the assumption that the pill can actually prevent implantation of a fertilized egg. A questionable metzius, probably true for the Ella pill, but unclear whether that's true for the morning after. Last topic for today, last way of birth control for today, safe days. Like we mentioned before, the egg can be fertilized within 24 hours of ovulation. The sperm can live for about 72 hours, or maybe even up to 5 days. So if a couple of refrains from Tashmish, starting 72 hours before ovulation until 24 hours after ovulation, she just won't become pregnant, right? So there are ovulation kits. Like a woman can tell when she's ovulating. So if she can calculate her ovulation, then you could just avoid having Tashmish for those 4 days, and then you should be fine. The practical benefits of that is that it's free. You don't need a doctor. There's no hormones involved. The practical drawbacks are that it's not at all idiot-proof, right? Meaning the best kind of birth control is the kind that's idiot-proof because, you know, people are people. Also, sometimes your ovulation is not super predictable. And it's very limiting on the couple's life. The Rambam, in the 15th paragraph of Hilchos Ishus, we've mentioned this before in the Shulchan Aruch, and Ebenezer, Simnayin Vav, Sivav, quotes it, that a isha shehirsheis es baila achar nisuin sheyimna onasa harizemotu. That if a woman tells her husband, meaning over here, it's not sirus, it's not hashchas hazara, it's not abortion, obviously. What is it? It's a bitul mitzvah zona. So the Ram says, let's say a woman says to her husband, it's okay, you could be mvatalona, harizemotir. Medvar mamurim kshayil abanim shekvar kiyam mitzvahs piri v'rivya. That's only if you're ready Mekayim Peruvu, but if you have not been Mekayim Peruvu, then you're not allowed to refrain from Tashmish, b'chol ona va'ona. So refraining from Tashmish when she can get pregnant is a bitul mitzvah peruvu, not a problem of anything else. The Rav Moshe, in Ebenezer Chelek Aleph Siman Kuf Beis, writes, v'nei be'etzem mitzvahs ona, ime isha mocheles b'leiv shalem, pater. For sure, if the woman says, I'm not at all interested in Tashmish, then you don't have a mitzvah ona for a woman who's not interested in Tashmish. But a woman does have a shiba to her husband if the husband wants to have Tashmish. So if they both don't want to have Tashmish, that's fine. But all of that is only if they've already fulfilled Puruvu. Otherwise, you have to be boel b'chalona. What does b'chalona mean? So the Mishnah Ksuba says it depends what your profession is, right? If you're a sailor, it's once every 6 months. If you're a donkey rider, it's one, I don't remember the numbers, but whatever. It's and onas tamal chachamim erev Shabbos erev Shabbos. So it doesn't mean that you have to b'chalona. Doesn't mean like every 12 hours, right? Meaning it means within the normal time frames. So he says, "Umemela nifshat sheilas harishonu dekodim sheki and puravu in a rashi l'dalik ayamim sheichal lesaber v'levol rak biyom shel fitas arofim bezmanenu lo tuchal lesaber." So until they've done puravu, you can't just skip on those days that she can actually become pregnant because they have a chiyuv for puravu. But if they already were mekayim in puravu and it's only mitzad mitzvazona, so mele, understand that's going to be mutter, right? It's debatable whether it's best to delay tevila until after the ovulation, so you could be mekayim mitzvazona belel tevila, or better not to delay tevila. The different rabbanim that Machon Pua asks are shailas to have different attitudes toward that. Some said, yeah, better to delay the tevila, and therefore he's actually not being mevatel anona. I mean, you should go to the mikvah a few days later, more than 24 hours after ovulation, and then everything will be great. Then it will be mekayim mitzvazona and belel tevila. Others say, no, there are shar kurvos that they want to do. Husband and wife enjoy passing things to each other, v'chule. So why do they have to lose out on a few days of opportunity to do that? Right, the only one that I was thinking about talking about that we didn't get to is washing herself out after Tashmish, which is not really so, douching or something like that after Tashmish. And we don't really need to get into that. So maybe next week. The other thing I wanted to get, next week maybe we'll start with some cases halacha l'maisa, like some common cases that come up, common shailas that come up, and then maybe we'll move into hilchos tznius. Sound good? Plan? Good. Alright, also keep with the WhatsApp for exact shiur time. Right now we're on schedule for regular time on Sunday, but my kids are coming back from Florida and I have to pick them up and I'm not sure exactly, and I have Bruce and a Pidyon HaBen and luck on that Sunday morning, but that's a shame. Thank you.